Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. With me is Phil Conlon, Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
Well, it's Labor Day weekend. We're pre-recording, but that's what I know. I'm saying it for a fact. So we want to talk about labor matters and world issues. But I have to start off with, I think it's going to be the question for the next period here. And that is, it comes this way. I think the question is, will the West ever recover from the loss of Gorbachev? They are heartbroken. And it's a marvelous display of narcissism and parochialism that everything is about how in the Western media is what a great guy, while pointing out that nobody in Russia could stand him. And that isn't explored at all, except to say that they're Russians and they're backward. To me, people have done Taylor Report. But if you've been following modern history, you would know that Gorbachev is not a beloved figure, neither in Russia, nor in Africa, nor in Asia, nor South America, because he wasn't their friend. He was a friend of probably one of the most colorful and crucial leaders of Western imperialism. He kissed up to Ronald Reagan. I mean, Ronald Reagan said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And he tore it down. And nothing bad could happen, right? So he tears it down. And today, 2022, NATO is at Russia's doorstep. So tearing it down was an invitation to the modern gold rush. They broke every promise. By the way, the promise we're always talking about, and to me it's embarrassing. They said Gorbachev was promised by Reagan and others that they would not expand NATO east of the what used to be East Germany, because you know, one of the things they did, they united Germany, made it part of NATO. Gorbachev, by the way, complained about that, but he was such a doormat that it is no great impression left of his having resisted. He does say that, yeah, we had a deal, and yes, the West broke it, but you know, they gave me a Pizza Hut commercial, and so I made up. You know, I think it's fair is fair. Gorbachev's daughter lives in Germany. So in fact, it was very simple. He was regarded as what he was, a sellout, one who betrayed his own party. He was a communist in a communist party. And he became an acolyte of the great labor leader, Ronald Reagan. And think about the period. He's rather like Lech Walesa. Lech Walesa, according to the Canadian labor movement and the American labor movement, was the greatest labor leader anybody ever saw. And he, Lech Walesa, endorsed Ronald Reagan when Ronald Reagan was running for president. They said, Ronald Reagan had his picture taken, standing with the Statue of Liberty behind him, with his arms around the parents of Lech Walesa. There's a history of this type of individual who is allegedly allied with the labor movement and allegedly interested in socialism. But he capitulated, and he wasn't just selling out his own country. And I think certainly the Russian populations see that as what he did, but a bunch of other people too. He tried to undermine Fidel Castro. He tried to convince Fidel that he had to follow these the magic words. And Phil, I'll ask you, can you translate glasnost and perestroika? It was obviously
one of them meant openness. The Americans have always had a funny use of the concept of opening up. It means we send our merchants, we send our battleships, and you open up your ports and we walk in. Yes. And that's openness, right? And so the Soviet Union was a closed society, according to Ronald Reagan. But Gorbachev was a man with vision.
Gorbachev,
right?
He wanted to open it to Ron.
Yeah.
Ronnie.
Margaret Thatcher gets an honorable mention here because Gorbachev loved Margaret Thatcher, and she said, he's a man I can do business with.
Yeah. She gave him the business, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what glasnost means. Perestroika.
It means restructuring, according to the footnote I see appearing on my screen.
Okay.
So I'm going to claim I know. But these are words. You could see what he was up to. He said, we're going to make nice with the West. And they're not going to harm us because they're open and democratic. And I asked them not to move NATO toward us. And they did that. But, you know, I held up my end. I said, you can invade my country. And they invaded. He created a bunch of monsters, Yeltsin being, you know, the one who succeeded him. That period, the life expectancy of Russians declined by 10 years during the restructuring, during perestroika, particularly under Yeltsin. And what does it mean? They took public owned enterprises and gave them to groups of people who became what they call oligarchs. And all the oligarchs turned out to be as smart as you might think. They took all the money and went abroad, but started stealing elsewhere. The people talk about this phenomenon of the oligarch throughout East Europe now. That was brought in, that was all Gorbachev. He tried actively to remove Fidel and others. He did it. There, throughout the so-called, at that time, there was a word, we don't use it anymore, third world. Almost all of those who were independent, and see, it was a multipolar world at that time. When the concession was made and Gorbachev betrayed his own organization and his country, to the great delight, cartwheeling delight of the West, along with it went any country that was involved in trade and dependency on a multipolar relationship. So if you look across Africa, they all fell like 10 pins as a result of the policies initiated by Gorbachev. I think there's a very nice lesson in his having met with the leader of the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Republic of China. When I say the leader, by this time he was the leader emeritus, Deng Xiaoping. At the time of the student demonstrations, by the way, there had been a party split in China. And there were students who were backing a kind of Gorbachev-like figure that they wanted to become the leader of China, but the Chinese party wisely decided they didn't want to do that. But there was a demonstration. And curiously enough, Gorbachev said he wanted to meet the Chinese leadership. Of course, he came there to sell them on his ideas. And he said, I want to meet the students. And they said, that's unfortunate because you're not going to meet him. And then he did meet Deng Xiaoping. Deng Xiaoping is a veteran he was at the time about 90 years old. And you remember him, Phil, he was about 5 feet tall. A very interesting man to look at, to listen to. But he and Gorbachev shook hands. They sat down, I guess, had tea. And then Deng Xiaoping, they said, as he left, said, that guy's no, he's not a Marxist, Mr. Gorbachev. That wouldn't describe him. And there were no further meetings, and they did not follow his policy. So he came there as a salesman. Ronald Reagan made him into a salesman, and he decided he was going to convince him. He didn't get to first base. And China, as we now know, is one of the most rapidly developing countries in the, what am I saying? It is the most rapidly developing country in the world under the management leadership of the Communist Party of China, something which causes them to tear their hair out here in the Globe and Mail, New York Times. They're trying to figure this out. But at any rate, those who didn't go down the line with him, some of them ended up dead. Ceausescu of Romania, the Russian party and Russian government connived in his murder. He was murdered. I don't know if you remember, Phil, but Ceausescu was captured by his soldiers of his own army, et cetera, because there had been a coup, and they all wanted to have oligarchs like everybody else. So they killed Ceausescu and his wife, shot them in the face. I don't know if people know this. Ceausescu was singing in the International when they shot him, just to kind of rub it into them so that he was, that's one, like Joe Hill, for the record. I ask a question again. Is the West going to recover from the loss of Gorbachev? They're going to be in terrible pain about this. The next guy up was Yeltsin. I mentioned him. Yeltsin, you will remember, was financed and advised directly by the United States. And the United States now says every time the U.S. has an election, you could be running for county sheriff in El Paso, and they will wonder whether or not the Russians might be interfering. But Bill Clinton and the American administration, with a bunch of hired help, went into Russia and helped Yeltsin in his campaign for president directly. There's even a movie about it. Did you see the film, Phil? Making a kind of a, it was done as humor, but it was all about how they manipulated the election.
I remember hearing about the film, and I remember reading at the time that Clinton was treating that election as if it was part of his party machinery, you know, where we got to get together and deliver the result we're supposed to get, you know.
Yeah. They relied on him heavily, and unfortunately for them, he turned into kind of a lacquered doll and fell over from alcohol because all he did was sell whatever was left to sell of the country, and the living standards dropped because of glasnost. To go to Yeltsin again, I was reading Fidel's memoirs about knowing Gorbachev, and incidentally, he was gulled a bit by Gorbachev. When it came time, when, you know, it was like Gorbachev trying to close the deal, they were being nice. And then he says, you know, we think you should do this. And Fidel said, I'm not going to do that. But he also knew Yeltsin. He had known him when Yeltsin was the mayor of Moscow. And think about this. Yeltsin takes over, the Communist Party is removed from power, though it remains in the country. It's the largest opposition party to Putin. But Yeltsin, after he became the leader, visited Miami, hosted by the people there who are the counter-revolutionaries from 1959, all the old Batista gang hosted Yeltsin, and Yeltsin denounced Fidel. And it's kind of painful to read Fidel's memoirs, because he said, I met him, I liked him, I thought he had some good ideas. But then he comes to Miami, and people may forget, Cuba was assumed to be the next domino. They were going to collapse because U.S. finally had unipolar power in the world, and they had a checklist of countries to overthrow the governments. They overthrew everybody in East Europe. They could go the nice way, agreeing on it to follow Gorbachev, or they could be rubbed out, pushed out. But that's how far it went, is that Yeltsin was actually 90 miles away calling on Cuba to adopt the ways of the guys who were trying to overthrow the Cuban government in Miami, with, as we know, a lot of help, because they've always been financed by the U.S. going all the way back to the Bay of Pigs. So I think there should be an appreciation of how bad an individual this was, Gorbachev. He wasn't the first. I was looking at the person they call his biographer, Mr. Taubman. It's very interesting that the definitive biography, they call it the definitive biography, by the way, it always wins a prize, won a prize. Definitive biography is written by Mr. Taubman of New York. He's a professor and has book. He had a previous book. You won't be surprised to know his first award-winning book was a biography of Khrushchev. And anybody, again, following Russian Soviet history will know that Gorbachev was a version of Khrushchev. But Taubman writing, and by the way, he's writing now. He wanted to get right on. As soon as Gorbachev passed, he wrote this essay, or it was published. He said some revealing things about him. Well, also about himself. Here he has an award-winning book, and he's the definitive man to talk about Gorbachev. He said he had 7 interviews with Gorbachev in his office in Moscow, and they lasted 2 hours each. So he had 14 hours of conversation with Gorbachev, and then wrote the definitive biography of Gorbachev. And it's actually, like most books written in the West, it's actually a narcissistic book about how good we are. It's like he wanted to be like us. He was actually an open democratic guy like we are. He cared about the people just like we do, but he couldn't, the Russians don't know anything about democracy. And so it was a nearly impossible job. You can imagine Gorbachev trying to create an open society in a place that didn't understand. So, I want to raise my hand and say, Mr. Taubman, can I ask you something? How is it that following the Bolshevik Revolution, Russian Revolution of 1917, that women won the right to work, the right to vote, the right to study? They helped build a new society that became an industrial scientific power. This all happened in 19, when you didn't have, women didn't have the right to vote in UK, Canada, United States. They did it. But according to Mr. Taubman, who's a genius, I guess, they don't understand democracy. And that's why they always go back to czars. I don't know if you know, Phil, but Putin is actually Ivan the Terrible. And Ivan the Terrible, I looked into him, apparently he's Joe Stalin. So these Russians just have this thing about being Russian. But again, Taubman, he also quotes Gorbachev. Gorbachev referred to himself in the third person. He liked to say things about himself. One of the things he liked to say was, Gorbachev is difficult to understand. He would say that. And actually, you could read him like a book, but he thought he was difficult to understand. And Gorbachev said to him, they wanted me to be a czar, but I don't know, I couldn't, didn't know how to be a czar. I'll tell you what, you pretty czar-like stuff when you go to Cuba and tell Fidel he's got to do what you're doing. That sounds kind of czar-like. And you tell all the leaders in Eastern Europe, remember he kissed them all goodbye. He had a farewell tour for them. When Gorbachev sold out, to put it bluntly, he went through, particularly I remember greeting the leader of East Germany, he kissed them all three times, you know, but that was a goodbye kiss, because after he left town, they were gone, including Ceausescu, as I said. And people, of course, think that was delightful, shooting Ceausescu, that was a great accomplishment. But it's a revealing, what's revealing is Taubman, all he's doing is flattering us. The way he writes about Gorbachev is so that he can flatter us. We are so advanced. You can't expect Russians to understand democracy and freedom, glasnost, perestroika, those kind of things, because, you know, they're backward. And but we have to keep trying. So that's why we have the CIA. And that's why we help set up the oligarchs. We're doing our best. And again, I think the most memorable thing of Gorbachev is going to be the Pizza Hut commercial. By the way, Phil, did you see it?
Many, many times. And of course, it's being replayed these days and reminded me of the fact that as a pizza connoisseur, Pizza Hut is not a particularly inspiring brand. And it was no great advance for the Russian people to have Pizza Hut pop down all over their country. And they're better cooks than that. But anyway,
they said everybody can have a different point of view so long as they like Pizza Hut. That was the message. Somebody said you're a sellout, and the other guy said you're a hero. And they said, you see, at Pizza Hut, we all agree we love Pizza Hut, which would put them in a minority. But this is the Taylor Report. And yes, they're in search of a new Gorbachev. And it'll take longer this time because the Russians got to try out openness, loss of right to employment, loss of access to education, loss of health care, and got to find out what it's like not to have to be starved to death in a village somewhere. So now they like the guy they got, and you can tell they do because Toronto, Ottawa, New York, Paris, London hate him, whatever his name is, but they don't like him because, frankly, the Russians seem to do. Putin at the moment is probably one of the most popular leaders in the world. And it's because they decided they were no longer going to follow the course of running and serving when Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton or the Bush family or Obama told them to do something. They decided they would say niet. That's a pretty good word. By the way, no is a good word. Anywhere you are in the world, learn to say no, and you would stay out of trouble. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. We'll take a break. We're going to come back and talk further about the labor matters.